Hare Krishna. Shri Balaram Purnima Ki Jai. What a wonderful day, wonderful occasion. Now, is it just my imagination running away with me that I see many men wearing blue kurtas today? And many ladies wearing blue. Is it just an imaginary thing? Is it just a mental projection? Is it by accident or design, men? It's by accident, is it? By design, is it? Okay. Ladies, is it by accident or design? Huh? Because Krishna's wearing blue. The decoration on the altar is beautiful, absolutely stunning. Blue and white. Why should it be blue and white today? Yes, Balaram. Balaram is white and he dresses in blue quite often, if not all of the time. And thereby lies an interesting feature of the relationship between Krishna and Balaram, which I hope to bring out in my notes. Just recently, I noticed the Los Angeles Ratha Yatra, where Krishna, Balaram, and Lady Subhadra and Srila Prabhupada were escorted to the beginning of the Ratha Yatra site, processional site, onto the chariots, not only by a police escort, but by a fleet of color-coordinated Mustang convertibles. You ask me, what would God choose to ride in Los Angeles? It's probably a Mustang convertible, but each one was color-coded for their particular Lord. So we had a black one for Jagannath. We had a white one for Balaram, a golden one, a yellow one for Lady. And what color was Prabhupada riding in? Saffron color, yeah. And as the police escort started up and there was blue flashing lights, usually there's a color code in nature. The color coding in nature, if something is different, watch out. It's a warning. So a red flashing light, you know, blue flashing light. Something's about to happen that's completely different. If you see a bee, it's black and yellow stripes. If you see a snake, a rattlesnake, you get the stripes. So in nature, these are color codes that something's about to happen. So this is a color code that Krishna and Balaram are about to appear. Krishna and Balaram are about to appear. Before we get too flippant, let us recite together a beautiful prayer that was written by Srila Rupa Goswami, which will serve to focus our minds on some of the attributes of the Lord. Of course, when we wear these different colors and we do these different colors, it's rather like any football fan, would paint their face in the color of the team. Every football team has colors, and sometimes the fans wear a scarf, most of the time. If they're really ambitious, they wear a shirt. And if they're really, really ambitious, then they paint their face in the color of the team. It does not mean that they're going to leap onto the pitch and play football. They're not allowed to do that. Only a select few are allowed to do that. But it does mean that their heart and mind are fully absorbed in the object of their devotion. But there's one thing even higher than football, and that is God. So when someone dresses themselves in a particular way, it's to remind themselves of the Supreme Lord. And that's why we wear tilak. So Lord Balaram wears tilak, Krishna wears tilak, and we wear tilak. That doesn't mean that we are trying to usurp the positions of Krishna and Balaram. It's like Pondraka. Pondraka, he came and he challenged Krishna, and he was wearing a set of false arms. He was wearing two arms strapped to the back of his shoulders, and one had the shank, or the conch, another had the discus. And Krishna just looked at that, and he said, you send a message to this man that he is a snake. He's imitating the position of the Supreme Lord. He looks very foolish. He said, no, he's a frog. And there's a black snake called Krishna, who's coming to gobble him up. And of course, Pondraka was no more. So we don't imitate the attributes of God when we put tilak on, but rather we're saying that the highest part of my body, that part of my body in which all the pride is there, if a person is very proud, they hold their head up high, don't they? Be proud. Hold your head up high. Okay? That's the message. If you're feeling down, hold your head up. Hold your head up high. Unfortunately, that can go a little too far, and you can be proud of something that you don't really possess, or something which is temporary, or something which was just given to you. So in order to chasten that, when you go to a place of worship, you take your hat off. Take your hat off. You're in church. Take your hat off. Okay. If you go to a Sikh Gurdwara, of course, they say, or a synagogue, they say, put your hat on. You're in the presence of God. So something has to change to remove your pride. So tilak is like that. You put tilak on so that the highest part of you is on the feet of God. And this is what we remember. So our aim is to reduce the bodily demands and to increase the spiritual demands, to decrease the bodily identification and to increase the spiritual identification. And this we do in our life as devotees. And these festivals are to help us understand our eternal relationships above and beyond the relationships that are so precious to us. So with just this in mind, Srila Rupa Goswami, one of the six Goswamis, he says the following. And I would like you to sit up straight, take a deep breath, put your hands together if you wish. It's always a good mudra for meditation. And repeat after me. Let me take shelter of the lotus feet of Balaram, whose beauty is enhanced by the earrings touching his cheeks. His face is decorated with tilak, made from musk, and his broad chest is decorated with a garland of small conch shells. His complexion is as white as an autumn cloud. He wears garments of blue color, and his voice is very grave. His arms are very long, touching his thighs. And he has shown great strength by killing the Pralamba demon. Let me take shelter of this chivalrous Balaram. Oh, what a wonderful prayer. What a wonderful prayer. And what a wonderful meditation also. These meditations bring out the essence of the person and allow us to, just for a few moments, meditate on him. Srila Prabhupada explains who Lord Balaram is. And it's a good job, too, because Kanishta, which means the beginning devotee, there is a tendency only to think of one principle, you know, one essential thing, one God, one mantra, one book, one color, which makes it difficult for interfaith dialogue because, of course, everybody else has a different name or a different book or a different color or a different something else. We have a tradition in which there are many, many hundreds and thousands of names of God, all the colors of the rainbow, all the different avatars, and many, many books. But Kanishta means it is very difficult to focus the mind on all of that. And so early on in Krishna consciousness, we focus our mind just on Krishna. And it's very easy. Actually, it's not easy if you grew up Christian, as I did, to focus your mind on Krishna. For the first 9 months as a devotee, I really agreed with reincarnation and the soul and the mantra and vegetarianism and all these things. But Krishna was... It was a different conception for me. I struggled with Krishna. Okay. What to speak of Balaram? Because Balaram is Krishna's brother. That's very good. But what does he do? Krishna speaks the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is the sum and substance of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But who is Balaram? This was always a great question for me. And then that question was resolved by Prabhupada saying he's Krishna's brother, and he's an expansion of Krishna, the primary expansion of Krishna, and so therefore he's fully under Krishna's control, but he plays the role as the servant of Krishna. So I thought, okay, I've done that. I've been there, I've explored Balaram, and I've got that. He's really a sort of puppet on a string as far as Krishna is concerned. But then actually when you read the stories about Balaram, you find that Balaram is a complete counterpoint to Krishna. He's a complete counterpart to Krishna. Just as music becomes more musical when we have harmony, isn't it, Jayadev? When you have when you introduce harmony, which is a different note, huh? When you have backing vocals, it's a different note than the singer is singing. So actually, you're sort of in opposition to the singer by singing a completely different note. But somehow or another, this singing of two different notes, or three, sounds better than the singer singing one note. That's why you always have a singer with backing singers. Okay? And if in a garden you plant yellow flowers, then you know right next to the yellow flowers you're meant to plant blue or purple, because there is such thing as a color wheel. And it will look better. It will set off the blue if you have yellow. So in this way, the contrast is increased between Krishna and Balaram, not just in the clothing, but in their speech, their activities, and their opinions. And this is called God telling a story. When God tells a story, the essence of a story is drama. Essence of a story is drama, which sometimes means conflict. Now, you wouldn't imagine that anybody could be in conflict with God himself. But actually, what we see that all the way through Krishna's Leela is conflict. We see all the different demons coming, and we see this conflict. And it enhances Krishna's supremacy when this conflict arises. And it makes it for a very palatable story. So at sometimes in the life of Krishna and Balaram, we see that Balaram had fundamental disagreements with Krishna. Fundamental disagreements in Krishna with Krishna. But this only allowed Krishna's pastimes to go ahead and be very nice. And the fact that 5,000 years later, we're still discussing these differences means that Krishna is the supreme creator of drama, supreme creator of the story. So here's what Prabhupada says. He says, Sri Baladev is the supreme personality of Godhead himself. He is equal in supremacy to the supreme Godhead. Yet wherever Krishna appears, Sri Baladev appears as Krishna's brother, sometimes elder, sometimes younger. So wherever Krishna appears, and he appears yada yada hi dharmasya glani, he appears many, many times, and he always appears, there's always an older brother or a younger brother. This is Sankarshan, this is his position. And the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, he says, in his Vaibhava Prakash feature, Lord Krishna manifests himself as Balaram. The Balaram feature is as good as Krishna himself, the only difference being that the bodily hue of Krishna is dark and that Balaram is fair. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he gives a few more details. He says, Sri Balaram is the servitor Godhead who serves Lord Krishna in all affairs of existence and knowledge. The transcendental abode exists by the energy of Lord Balaram. Krishna's first expansion in a form for pastimes is Balaram. Balaram himself helps in the pastimes of Lord Krishna, and he does the work of creation in four other forms. Who can name the four other forms? Chaturvyuha. Every time you put on tilak, you're remembering these names? If you put on tilak in 12 different places. If you put on tilak in one place, it's just Keshava. Vasudev, Sankarshan, Aniruddha. As the ladies are saying this here, they must put on tilak. Prajumna and Aniruddha. Okay. So Balaram expands as Sankarshan, and then all these expansions have expansions, and everything within the material manifestation, cosmic manifestation, comes into order, including the different aspects of the Supreme Lord. Balaram is always the servant of the Lord. Sankarshan is always the servant of the Lord. And he appears as his paraphernalia. So the Sheshanaga, upon which the Lord reclines in his Vishnu form, this is Sankarshan or Balaram. The temple of the Lord, in which the Lord is housed. So if we see Radha and Krishna on the altar here, the altar is Balaram. Bhaktivedanta Mana is Balaram because it supports Krishna, and Krishna is the center of activity. When we pick up a mridanga, sometimes the mridanga, especially in Navadvip, the mridanga gets the arti flame first. It's considered to be Balaram. Kartals are Balaram. The whole world is an expansion of Balaram. Sometimes people will come and say, don't lean on the temple wall during kirtan. Kirtan, the temple wall is Balaram. So in order to be a servant, in order to be a proper brother, you must, a servant takes a very close position to his master, but that closeness is not a challenging closeness. He takes a lower position. So, for instance, a person who is a really good servant, we see when we look at the altar, we see Hanuman. He's very close to Ram, but his position is at the feet. He's always in a position where he serves him. At the same time, when the Lord appears as Krishna and Balaram, Balaram is the older brother. So Krishna is also serving Balaram sometimes, massaging his feet when they go to take the cows out to pasture. We'll find that Krishna doesn't say to Balaram, okay, foot massage, please. Okay. He says, my dear brother, please sit down here in the grass, put your back against this tree, let me massage your feet. And then Krishna picks up a big leaf, and begins to fan Balaram. So these positions are changed. But normally Balaram is the older brother in a mood of service to Krishna. there's many ways that he does this. So, for instance, Balaram was the chief instigator in getting Krishna into trouble. He went to his mother, Yashoda, and said, my brother's been eating dirt. He must be punished. And then Yashoda comes and says, well, have you been eating dirt? Let me look inside your mouth. Okay? So Balaram is there. I worked out that one. So Krishna never came back to Vrindavan, but Balaram did. Here's a contrast. He comes and visits the inhabitants there. When Balaram arranged the marriage of his sister Subhadra to Duryodhan, Krishna disagreed, and he arranged the marriage of Subhadra to Arjuna. When Balaram heard this, he, being the elder brother has the say on who the younger sister gets married to. My dear Krishna, you can't just marry our sister to whoever you like. I think that she should be married to Duryodhan. And this is very strange, because Duryodhan didn't like Krishna. So why does Balaram like Duryodhan? It doesn't seem to make sense. You know, the enemy of my friend is my enemy. So, of course, normally Krishna is, we say that he's fair to everyone, and Krishna tries to be fair. But with Duryodhan, he's just such a constant pain in the neck. You know, Krishna was very, very tolerant. He was very tolerant with Shishupal. How many times was he tolerant with Shishupal? No? 99 times? 99 times Krishna was tolerant with Shishupal. Then the 100th time, Krishna says, okay, that's it. Ching. And then it was, Shishupal was finished, mid-sentence. The very nice painting of Shishupal, and he's just, and that's it, that's as far as he got. But even he, and the acharyas are very quick to point out, that Krishna is so kind, that even Shishupal, who insulted Krishna 99 and then one more time, 100 times. Even he got a form of liberation. And the devotees of the Lord praise the Lord for his great kindness. Similarly with Putana. She came as a witch. Actually, she came as a beautiful lady. She was going to breastfeed the children. Okay. She wanted to poison Krishna. And Krishna gave her liberation. So was it Rupa Goswami who says, how wonderful is my Lord who, even though someone came to poison him, he gives them, you know, the highest, not quite the highest, but he gives them liberation. This is a very kind person. So Krishna is very kind with Duryodhana also. But eventually, the battle of Kurukshetra took place because there was no other solution. And this is the point. When there's no other solution, then it's argumentum ad baculum, as the Latin scholars call it. There's different ways that you can try to argue with a person. And, you know, words are the first way. Actually, listening is the first way. Helping them feel understood. If I listen to you, that's a kind of, it looks like you've won because you're doing all the talking. But I'm listening, and in my listening, I'm defeating you because I'm extending myself to you. I'm trying to understand you. So it's a very powerful weapon. Don't forget the power of listening. It's very important. Very important. So then comes the power of speaking. Then comes the power of, persuasion and offering of gifts. Okay. If you do agree with me, I will, you know, I'll make it interesting for you. And then finally, when nothing else, argumentum ad baculum. So, Krishna wanted to, eventually make war. He went 3 times to the party of Duryodhana. And he said, all right, well, we have to have war. And then Balaram disagreed, no. He wanted to protect Duryodhana anyway, enough of them. And Krishna was praising Yudhishthira. Balaram says, well, he wasn't that good. You know, Krishna said, no, Shakuni cheated on the dice. And Balaram says, well, yeah, but he shouldn't have played dice with Shakuni. He could have played dice with anyone. My dear Krishna, the fact is that Yudhishthira is a bad dice player. He lost because he's weak. So Krishna said, no, he lost because someone cheated. So, you know, this is Krishna and Balaram. There's a difference of opinion going here. So, would you like to hear from Srila Prabhupada instead of my speculations? Let us hear of the beautiful birth of Lord Balaram, which took place today, on this day. This is Balaram Purnima. Balaram Purnima. And Balaram Purnima is so called because it is the Shukla Paksha, Purnima Titi, and it is the month of Shravan, I hope. And it is this special day which occurs every year on a different Gregorian calendar date. It slides according to the calendar that you hang on your wall, but today is the date, is the day when we appreciate the Lord in this form. It is the Purnima, or the full moon, after Pavitropana Ekadashi. It will always be Balaram's appearance day. For some people, it is also this Rakshabandhan. Rakshabandhan is done today. But in the south of India, they also do something called Upakarma. Upakarma means that in honor of Balaram being the original guru, you could say, the access point to Krishna, you change your Brahmin thread. So those of you that are Brahmins, have a look at your thread right now. And if it's slightly faded, slightly yellow, you change it today at some stage. And there's a whole procedure for that. But we, so there'll be a lot of thread breaking and a lot of thread changing today all over India. Thread tying and thread changing. And for us, reestablishing our thread of connection with Krishna. So, Vasudev and Devaki were in the jail of King Kamsa. When Devaki became pregnant for the seventh time, a plenary expansion of Krishna, known as Ananta, appeared within her womb. Devaki was overwhelmed with both jubilation and lamentation. She was joyful, for she could understand that Lord Vishnu had taken shelter within her womb, but at the same time, she was sorry that as soon as her child would come out, Kamsa would kill him. At that time, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, being compassionate upon the Yadus, who were fearful due to the atrocities committed by Kamsa, ordered the appearance of Yoga Maya, his internal potency. Krishna is the Lord of the universe, but he is especially the Lord of the Yadu dynasty. Yoga Maya is the principal potency of the Personality of Godhead. In the Vedas, it is stated that the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has multi-potencies, Parasya, Shaktir, Vividaira, Shruyate. All the different potencies are acting externally and internally, and Yoga Maya is the chief of all potencies. The Lord ordered the appearance of Yoga Maya in the land of Brajabhumi, in Vrindavan, which is always decorated and full with beautiful cows. In Vrindavan, Rohini, one of the wives of Vasudeva, was residing at the house of King Nanda and Queen Yashoda. Not only Rohini, but many others in the Yadu dynasty were scattered all over the country due to their fear of the atrocities of Kamsa. Some of them were even living in the caves of the mountains. So we know Vasudeva and Devaki because they were in the prison house of Kamsa, but Vasudeva had 15 other wives. 15 other wives. And they were scattered here and there. So Rohini was in the house of Nanda Maharaj. The Lord thus informed Yoga Maya, under the imprisonment of Kamsa and Devaki and Vasudev, Devaki and Vasudev, and at the present moment my plenary expansion, Shesha, is within the womb of Devaki. You can arrange the transfer of Shesha from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. After this arrangement, I am personally going to appear in the womb of Devaki with my full potencies. Then I shall appear as the son of Devaki and Vasudev. And you shall appear as the daughter of Nanda and Yashoda in Vrindavan. Got it? Okay. Took me a while to get it, actually. All this, you know. Since you will appear as my contemporary sister, and since you will quickly satisfy desires for sense gratification, people within the world will worship you with all kinds of valuable presentations, incense, candles, flowers, and offerings of sacrifice. And all over the world now, we see that the mother goddess, Yoga Maya, is very attractive to people. Even when your particular religious tradition doesn't give you a mother goddess, people are very attracted to a mother goddess because that's reality. It's reality that God is universal and God is attractive to all and that he appears in different ways, his potencies, Parasha Shakti Vividaya Shruyate. So all over the world now, whether you know this or not, women are calling out for God to be seen as the Supreme Mother. And they come to us and they say, well, I think God should be the Supreme Mother. And we say, that's okay. And they go, they're happy, they're delighted. Yes, come to us. We're very good shopkeepers. Anything you want, we can give you. Anything religion, you come to us. So Balaram appears. He was born in the house of Nanda Maharaj, where Rohini is living. This house is in Gokula, in Mahaban. And you can still go there today, to Nanda Maharaj's house. Some of the pillars are still there 5,000 years later. And this is called the Chaurasikumbha. They call it Chaurasikumbha. There's another place called Chaurasikumbha, which is in Kamyavan. But Nanda Maharaj's house is all. And I don't think you can quite get the Chaurasi, but it's quite... Chaurasi is 84. I'm just increasing the drama. Okay. So then along comes Putana and Trinavarta. 84. You sure? Because when I did Vrindavan Yatra, Braj Mandal Parikrama is Chaurasi Kosh. Yes, but Kosh is 2 miles, no? Oh, maybe I've got that wrong. I'm increasing the drama here. Okay. I'll take your word for it. It's 84. So along comes Putana. Then we have Trinavarta, the whirlwind demon. Putana is an evil lady who wants to kill babies. And this is, they're hardly even born. Balaram is older by 1 year, but Krishna is very small. And what's happening here? As soon as they're born, sometimes we have in this demoniac Western so-called civilization, we have men who are interested in killing children. And we think, oh, Kali Yuga is going so rampant now. It's so bad. But here 5,000 years ago, we have Putana, who not only wanted to kill children, she already had killed children previously, and now she was especially gifted. She was coming to kill this one particular child, Krishna. So of course she failed in her attempt, but just the fact that in the golden age of Vedic culture, you can have a person who's dedicated, absolutely so dedicated to killing a child, that they can come with poison smeared on their breast. Just imagine how evil that was. Today it would make the headlines, wouldn't it? Okay? Today it would make the headlines. Woman breastfeeds child with poison on her breast, deliberately kills the child. We wouldn't stop hearing about it for a week. Be in all the newspapers. Be all over the world. Such an atrocious thing. And yet, just almost as soon as Krishna is born, Putana comes. And it's sort of a harbinger of things to come. Because some acharyas say that a demon came every day. When Krishna was herding the cows, the calves first of all, and then the cows. Every day someone came. And we were in the Krishna book, in the Bhagavat Purana, we only have the main features, the main demons. You know, we select a few. There's some small ones, but we pass those over, big ones. So practically speaking, there are 350 chapters in Srimad Bhagavatam. 90 of them deal with Krishna, from Krishna's birth all the way through to his disappearance. So this is a lot, and those chapters are really big chapters. So practically more than you can say, anyone that wants to prove that Srimad Bhagavatam is about, you know, the mother goddess or Vishnu or this and that, you're welcome to do that, but the actual statistics speak for themselves, as well as the beginning and the ending. So Bhagavatam is all about Krishna. So here we have these stories, and the next place we come to after the whirlwind demon is, we haven't even got as far as the naming ceremony actually, but Garga Muni comes, and he says, are we doing okay? Tell me if I'm boring you, because the last thing I want to do is boring you. But there is a bit of reading today, because I just thought, you know, we're fasting, so let's make a day of it. You know, there's no breakfast. You're here. I'm sitting here on this cushion because somehow or another they've asked me to speak something, but I'm not going to. I want to give you what Prabhupada says. So, so then he says, so Garga Muni comes, and Nanda Maharaj says, well, look, we better keep this low profile. You know, usually a naming ceremony is a big event, right? I know when I do first grains or something, you know, coach loads from Leicester come. Such a big event. What is the event? Well, we're just seeing a tiny little bit of porridge go in the mouth of a baby, and there's a coach load from Leicester turns up. Why is it such a big deal? Well, when you sign a signature, you know, especially if you're a world leader or two world leaders, and they sign the signature on a piece of paper, it's just one line of ink. But the whole world will be there. They'll have a big press conference. Why? Because it's such an important line of ink. So when a child is given their first grains, it's a very important teaspoon. So parents will go to a jeweler's shop and they'll buy a special silver teaspoon or a golden teaspoon. And then they'll frame the teaspoon and put it on the wall. And this is very... And those of you from English families are going, huh? But this is a very important thing. So Garga Muni comes, and Nanda Maharaj says, you know, given the situation that we've had one person trying to kill Krishna by, you know, the poison breast technique, another whirlwind demon has come. I just don't think we'll have the coach load from Leicester today. I just think we'll have very small numbers. Nanda Maharaj said, if there is such danger, then it is better not to plan any gorgeous name-giving ceremony. It would be better for you to simply chant the Vedic hymns and perform the purificatory process. We belong to the twice-born caste. In other words, you know, and I'm taking this opportunity of your presence. So please perform the name-giving ceremony without external pomp. Nanda Maharaj wanted to keep the name-giving ceremony a secret and yet take advantage of Garga Muni's performing the ceremony. When Garga Muni was so eagerly requested by Nanda Maharaj, he performed the name-giving ceremony as secretly as possible. And he went into a cow barn. Secretly as possible. It was a secret ceremony. Went into a cowshed of Nanda Maharaj. He informed Nanda Maharaj that the son of Rohini, Balaram, would be very pleasing to his family members and relatives, and therefore would be called Rama. Okay? Because he was the son of Rohini, he would be called Rohini Nandana. Because he would be pleasing, he was called Bala Rama. In the future, he would be extraordinarily strong, and therefore he would be called Bala Deva. Bala Deva. So strong, attractive, who gives pleasure to Mother Rohini. Garga Muni said further, because your family and the family of the Yadus are so intimately connected and attracted, his name will also be Sankarsana, one who attracts, one who pulls. This means that Garga Muni awarded three names to the son of Rohini, namely Balaram, let's shout it out loud, namely Balaram, Sankarsana, and Baladev. But he carefully did not disclose the fact that Balaram had also appeared in the womb of Devaki and was subsequently transferred to the womb of Rohini. Krishna and Balaram are real brothers, being originally sons of Devaki. Okay, you have to remember that. They're real brothers. Okay. So then the boys immediately, almost as soon as they can crawl, they start getting into trouble. And Krishna and Balaram form a gang with the other boys of going to steal butter, yogurt, milk, whatever is available, we'll steal. Because it's a hot day and the butter's kept cool in pots and they're looking and they're thinking it's like ice cream for them. Have you ever had makkhan? Had makkhan, the traditional makkhan? I was in Nanda Maharaj's house, and His Holiness Lokanath Maharaj, he said, well, we should have makkhan. He said, you should understand what is makkhan. He said, because it is not this yellow butter from New Zealand. It is not this anchor. It is not this lurpak. Well, he didn't say that, but he said, you should understand what is makkhan. He said, so go and find some makkhan. And then we had a little picture, a big picture like this of baby Krishna that we had worshipped that morning. Because all over Vrindavan, where you go, there's Krishna in the attitude of that particular pastime that took place at that place. So as you go through the 128 miles of the, or Chaurasi Kosh, of the, maybe I walked further, maybe it was further, but you do this barefoot walk, and if you haven't done it, can I please, sitting on this cushion, having the microphone today, please ask you to do it once in your life. Just once in your life if you do this. It's absolutely fantastic. It'll really bring you close to the pastimes. And you'll be able to sort out in your head, probably for the first time, where all these pastimes happened. Because they're all higgledy-piggledy, and it's a big jigsaw puzzle when you come to the Krishna book. But if once in your life you walk that distance, no shoes, I guarantee that the pain that you experience on your feet will drive into your brain As they say, no pain, no brain gain. All the pastimes of Krishna will be firmly cemented in your head. And every time someone mentions a word, just like that song we sung this morning, as they were singing the different words of the song, I was remembering, first of all, I remember the pain in my feet, but then I had a picture of the place, and either I had a picture of the service that was done at that place, or the kindness that was shown to me by usually the mothers of the village. They would come out, and seeing someone, especially someone white, because there wasn't too many English people. Actually, I was the first English person to do it. But seeing a white man walking barefoot, you know, through their village as an act of religious devotion, it was too much for some of them. They would cry and they would come, and I was drowning in chas, drowning in vajra roti, drowning in, khichri. So the former two are okay, but khichri, especially cold khichri, even from a Brajbasi village, cold khichri is not my type of thing. But anyway, the love that they showed was wonderful. So I remember that love. And I think how it must have been in those days. There's not enough love to go around. Is there? There's not enough love in the world to go around. We're very guarded with our love. We're very guarded with our affection, because I'm not sure you trust me, and I'm not sure I trust you. So when that distrust means I can't give you love, you see. And love has also become channeled into, just as being a tool for trying to manipulate a person. But in those days, there was a lot more love. So the reason why Putana was led into the house, I mean, imagine the situation. Those of you that have had babies, imagine, you know, someone that you don't know, someone from, you know, another part of town or from another town completely, knocks on the door and says, can I breastfeed your child? Immediately you'd ring up social services or you'd ring the police. You say, there's someone come wants to breastfeed my child. I don't know who they are. But in those days, there was enough love around that people would even breastfeed each other's children. And that's why it was easy for Putana to get away with these things. So you might think, yes, and because all these things happened, now you have to be so careful. But, you know, I usually ask this question. I say, how many of you know the person who's... I grew up in a village, small village, in Cornwall, and everybody knew everybody. And sometimes that was quite painful, because as soon as you did something, your business would be all over town, all over the village. Oh, you're the one that stole the apples from Mr... How did you know? Well, it was the village grapevine. But it really helped at times. And there were times when my family really needed some assistance. So it was then the people of the same village who could be what we call nosy parkers. They came forward and they helped with food and they helped with different things. It's trips to the seaside, etc., like that sort of thing. So I got a little bit of that. It's just, you know, this is one place that is very... Lord Balaram was very fond of it because he and Krishna used to go there and they used to play with the turtles in the water, the kachapa. They used to play with the turtles, they used to hang on to the turtles. And if you hang on to a very large and strong turtle, the turtle will pull you through the water. So they used to go and play to that, used to go back to that place. So in that place, or just downstream, from that upstream, from that place, is Ramagat. And that is where for 2 months Lord Balaram danced the Ras Leela with his own gopis, not the same gopi maidens as Krishna. So he was there at that time drinking Varuni beverage, which is a slightly intoxicating mixture of honey and water. And when you go to that temple... There's a very nice temple there, and Balaram he's got his wives by the side of him, and in the middle he's got his pot, And the pot, the pujari always keeps that pot filled with honey. And of course, Mahaprasadam from that temple is honey. But then by Mother Nature's arrangement, or by the local devotee's arrangement, I don't know. But you go out and there is the biggest beehive that you've ever seen. Biggest beehive. If you look at this door behind me, from the top to the bottom, and almost as wide as the door, that's the size of the beehive. They've just, you know, it's just grown, grown, grown. And nobody objects to bees in that village, because the bees are also servants of Balaram. They make the honey, and then the honey is tapped and taken straight into the temple just across the village path. So it's a wonderful arrangement. So it's very easy to remember Balaram in that spot. And it's very easy for me to remember that spot because I was fed so nicely in that spot. So every time I see, I read the words, Jaya Rama Gata, Jaya, Rohini Nandan, I think of that spot. And suddenly my mouth becomes filled with honey. So these words should kick off remembrances. And if you don't have remembrance for a particular word or a particular pastime, then Brajmandal Parikrama is very, very handy. So anyway, they stole butter, and then Balaram told on Krishna he's been eating dirt. Mother Yashoda had that vision of the universal form. Then comes binding Krishna. Then comes Vatsasura, Bakasura, and Agasura. And with Agasura, we reach 5 years old. So all the pastimes that I've mentioned are all before Krishna and Balaram are even five. Okay? So under five is known as Komaram. 5 to 10 is known as Pauganda. 10 to 15 is Kaishora. And after 15 is known as Yauvanam. And all these pastimes are divided. So, but sometimes, you know, Balaram was... playing the older brother, and sometimes he played the younger brother. Just listen to this. The cows taken care of by Krishna. Thank you very much for your patience, by the way. I know it's a hard thing, especially when it gets to, you know, breakfast time and you start having an imaginary breakfast in your mind. And suddenly the person who's giving the class just is, you know, it turns from something interesting into the droning of a bee. Blah, 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 blah. I know it's difficult, and it'll be difficult roundabout now, because the stomach is saying to you, feed me. I love you. Feed me. I'm so devoted to you. I'm only here for you. Feed me. And your mind goes, not right now. I'm listening to an interesting class. And then they look at the person giving class, and the speaker giving class is going, blah, 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 blah. Krishna something, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I know, I've been there. The cows taken care of by Krishna had different names, and Krishna would call them with love. After hearing Krishna calling, the cows would immediately respond by mooing, and the boys would enjoy this exchange to their heart's content. They would all imitate the sound vibrations made by the different kinds of birds, especially the chakoras, peacocks, cuckoos, and bharadvajas. Don't ask me. Sometimes when they would see the weaker animals fleeing out of fear of the sounds of tigers and lions, the boys, along with Krishna and Balaram, would imitate the animals and run away with them. When they felt some fatigue, they would sit down, and Balaram would put his head on the lap of one of the boys just to take rest, and Krishna would immediately come and begin massaging the legs of Balaram. And sometimes Krishna would take a palm fan and fan the body of Balaram, causing a pleasing breeze to relieve him of his fatigue. Other boys would sometimes dance or sing while Balaram took rest, and sometimes they would wrestle amongst themselves or jump. When the boys were thus engaged, Krishna would immediately join them, and catching their hands, he would enjoy their company and laugh and praise their activities. So then we come to the first time that at least the acharyas have seen fit to share with us the major killing of a major demon that was all the work of Balaram. And his name was Dhenuka, Dhenukasura. And as the childhood song goes, which I'm not going to embarrass myself as I did last year by singing it, in the forest of Talavan, Lord Krishna and Balaram killed the Dhenukasura by whirling him around and around. So the donkey demon, the ass demon, was thrown into the trees and all the fruits were able to be eaten by Krishna and Balaram. In the forest of Talavan. Look, it breaks the tummy rumblings, okay? In the forest of Talavan, Lord Krishna and Balaram killed the Dhenukasura by whirling him around. You got to do the actions, you see. By whirling him around and around. Thank you. Just indulge me. As people get older, Jai Lakshman, as people get older, they just, you know, they get less philosophical and more playful, you see. So then comes Pralamba. Pralamba means separation. Pralamba means separation. Vipralamba is highly separated, but Pralamba means the demon who tried to separate Balaram from the rest of the cowherd boys. You know the story? He came and he pretended to be a cowherd boy himself. These very expert demons can manifest themselves in any form, and he manifested himself in the form of a fellow cowherd boy, the same shape and same size. Happy disposition. And then Pralamba was his name, and Pralamba was his activity. So Balaram was on top of his shoulders, and as he moved away, as he took Balaram away from everyone else, then he got bigger and bigger and bigger. And I want to read it because it brings out the sort of the playful killing of Balaram. Well, no, I won't. So it's important now to know that it's not just, these are not just the pastimes which the Lord has come for. There are other pastimes waiting to take place. With all this, Nanda Maharaj had begun to worship Lord Nrisimhadev. If you go to Nanda Maharaj's house let me back story that. Nanda Maharaj had an older brother. He also had an older brother called Upananda. And their father was Parajanya Maharaj. And since Balaram was the foster son of Nanda Maharaj, he was taken to be the grandson of Parajanya. So Nanda and Upananda had lived on top of a hill. Before Nanda Maharaj had moved to Gokula, he'd lived on top of this hill called Nandishwara. So then what happened was, you know, it's easier to defend yourself from all these disturbances, all these demons, if you live on top of a hill. Put your hand up if you've been to Nandagram. Got nice and very good. So if you've been to Nandagram, you know it's quite an unusual manifestation because Vrindavan is very flat. It's so flat that, you know, you can ride a bicycle without too much strain all over Vrindavan, most of it. And then these three hills, and they seem to just, boom, come out of the landscape like this. One of them is Nandagram. Called Nandagram because Nanda Maharaj and his whole family decamped from Gokula, which is in Mahavan, to Nandagram. And they lived very peacefully there. But Nanda Maharaj also, every day he worshipped Lord Nrisimhadev. Why did he worship Lord Nrisimhadev? Because Nrisimhadev is for the protection of everyone. So he thought, well, my child Krishna and Balaram, they keep getting attacked by these strange beasts. And half men, half beasts, and strange birds. We had Bakasura, we had Agasura, this huge snake. So let us move to another place. Unfortunately, however, this was also the place where, he wasn't a demon, he was a devotee, but he caused even greater pain than if he had been a demon. because the demons, they had not taken Krishna away. But this particular personality, he came, and somehow or another, he was able to slip through the security at the bottom of the hill, slip through the security at the top of the hill, slip right into Nanda Maharaj's house, and just, how did he do that? Because his name was Akrura, and he'd come with an invitation from Kamsa for a wrestling match. And acharyas have very long descriptions of how these two boys, Krishna and Balaram, perhaps you've seen the painting, perhaps you've heard those stories, how Krishna and Balaram, the parents said, "Well, we're not too sure about this, but you're, how old were they now? 11 years old. You're 11 years old now, you can go and you can..." And imagine, 11 years old, you're going to fight in a wrestling match. I don't think any parent now would allow it. But I guess a Vedic 11 is a slightly more mature 11. And certainly Krishna and Balaram had proved themselves time after time after time since their very birth. They proved themselves that they were good at handling these demonic forces. And so Nanda Maharaj very, very reluctantly let them go. But he cried a flood of tears, so much so that it was a puddle that turned into a lake, that turned into a stream. And as you stand on the top of Nandagram, there's still a long chariot road that goes off into the distance, which took the boys to Mathura. But now here's something very special that happened along the way. As they were leaving the boundaries of, Vrindavan to go into Mathura, something very special happened. And the boys went to take bath. Now, it says that a sannyasi should take bath three times a day. A householder should take bath two times a day. And a brahmachari can take bath one time a day. Okay? It doesn't mean that we have smelly brahmacharis. But in the hot Indian sun, this is definitely a good principle. And certainly when you have beautiful, crystal clear rivers and streams to bathe in, when water is very, we take it for granted sometimes, but when water is plentiful, then it's a wonderful opulence. So the Lord, accompanied by Akrura and Balaram, traveled in the chariot with great speed toward the bank of the Yamuna. Simply by taking a bath in the Yamuna, anyone can diminish the reactions of his sinful activities. Krishna and Balaram took their baths in the river and washed their faces. After drinking the transparent, crystal clear water of the Yamuna, they took their seats again on the chariot. The chariot was standing underneath the shade of big trees, and the two brothers sat down there. Akrura then took their permission to also take a bath in the Yamuna. According to Vedic ritual, after taking a bath in a river, one should stand at least half submerged and murmur the Gayatri mantra. While he was standing in the river, Akrura suddenly saw Balaram and Krishna within the water. He was surprised to see them there, because he was confident that they were sitting on the chariot. Confused, he immediately came out of the water and went to see where the boys were. And he was very much surprised to see that they were sitting on the chariot as before. When he saw them on the chariot, he began to wonder whether he had mistakenly seen them in the water. He therefore went back to the river. This time he saw not only Balaram and Krishna, but many of the demigods and all the siddhas, charanas, and gandharvas. They were all bowing down before the Lord. He also saw Lord Sheshanaga with thousands of hoods. Lord Sheshanaga was covered with bluish garments, and his necks were all white. The white necks of Sheshanaga appeared exactly like snow-capped mountains. On the coiled lap of Sheshanaga, Krishna was sitting very soberly, with four hands. His eyes were like the reddish petals of the lotus flower. In other words, after returning to the Yamuna, Akrura saw Balaram turn into Sheshanaga, and Krishna turned into Mahavishnu. He saw the four-handed Supreme Personality of Godhead smiling very beautifully. The Lord was very pleasing to all and was looking toward everyone with a merciful glance. He appeared beautiful, with his raised nose, broad forehead, attractive ears, and reddish lips. His arms, reaching to the knees, were very strongly built. His shoulders were high, his chest was very broad, and his neck was shaped like a conch shell. His navel was very deep, and his abdomen was marked with three lines. His hips were broad and big, resembling those of a woman. And his thighs resembled the trunks of elephants. The other parts of his legs, the joints and lower extremities, were all very beautiful. The nails of his feet were dazzling, and his toes were as beautiful as the petals of the lotus flower. His helmet was decorated with very valuable jewels. There was a nice belt around his waist, and he wore a sacred thread across his broad chest. Bangles were on his hands, and armlets on the upper portion of his arms. He wore bells on his ankles. He possessed dazzling beauty, and his palms were like lotus flowers. He was further beautified by the different emblems of the Vishnumurti, the conch shell, club, disc, and lotus flower, which he held in his four hands. His chest was marked with the particular signs of Vishnu, and he wore fresh flower garlands. All in all, he was very beautiful to look at. Akrura also saw his lordship surrounded by intimate associates, like the four Kumaras, Sanaka, Sanatan, Sananda, and Sanat Kumar, and other associates like Sunanda and Nanda, as well as demigods like Brahma and Shiva. The nine great learned sages were there, and also devotees like Prahlad and Narada Muni and the great Vasus. Akrura immediately became overwhelmed with great joy and devotion, and all over his body there was transcendental shivering. Although for the moment he was bewildered, he retained his clear consciousness and bowed down his head before the Lord. With folded hands and faltering voice, he began to offer prayers to the Lord. So this is wonderful vision. And Akrura becomes, ecstatic upon seeing the identity of Krishna and Balaram, or however they managed to manifest themselves in this particular way. So, before we leave Vrindavan, if you go to Vrindavan today, there's a forest called Madhuvan, the forest of honey. This is the same place. It is said that Dhruva Maharaj attained his vision of Prishnigarbha by chanting the mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And if you go there, you'll find a temple dedicated to Prishnigarbha. It's one of the first forests that you go to as you're leaving Mathura. Mathura is hard, actually. I mean, it's wonderful, but it's very congested, noisy, diesel fumes. You're walking barefoot on gravel all day. There's very nice places that you can go and see. You see the original Keshava, and you go to Vishram Ghat, and you go around, and then you see the place where Kamsa attempted to, you know, foolishly, he thought he could kill Yogamaya, and where she went up into the, and that there's another temple there called the Mahavidya Devi Temple. You still see today, 5,000 years later, the colored streams made by the men who dye cloth, and you think of Krishna and the cloth seller, and Krishna and the flower seller, as Krishna and Balaram entered into Mathura, and the different relationships with different people like that. It's interesting that of the two, Balaram seems to be slightly more easily upsettable, doesn't it? Whether it's a cloth seller, or whether it's Romaharshan Sutta, you know, that was dispatched with a little, you know, kusha straw, whether it was Rukmi, or the king of Kalinga who had his teeth smashed out because he laughed at Balaram losing the chess match. Whether it's Dvivida Gorilla, Lord, and he seems to be slightly more. Well, who's another one? Slightly more irascible, you could say. Slightly more quick, quick to rise to the occasion. Anyway, so you remember these things as going on, but it's a very tough day. And then you come to Mahavan, which is very, very nice. And after Mahavan is Talavan. And, of course, it's easy to remember Balaram in Mahavan, because there's a beautiful deity of Balaram there. And next door to Mahavan, Talavan, or a little down the road, of course. And this is where Lord Balaram killed the Dainukasura. Talavan used to be a van, but now, unfortunately, there's only one tal tree in the whole of the forest. So we've got a lot of work to do. When we've spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, we can go to Vrindavan and start planting trees. If each of you just plant one tal tree in Talavan, just one tal tree, the only place that you can go where you get some understanding of what it was like in the times that we speak of in the Krishna book is pretty much Kamyavan. If you go to Kamyavan, you can walk through the Kamyavan forest, which somehow, God knows how, they've been able to preserve. And there are sufficient trees that you can get an understanding as I'm in a forest. There's only one spot in the whole, you know, the whole region. So because there's firewood, there's people moving in. Unfortunately, what happens when you have a holy place? Everybody wants to be holy. They want their life to be changed by getting close to God in the place where he used to be. And so they go there, and then they need to keep warm in the wintertime, so they cut down trees. So the very thing that they came to see is no longer there. It's pretty much a concrete, you know, the forest of concrete. So in this generation, we need to get very serious about people changing Vrindavan into the concrete van. We need to plant trees. So when we've done with the business of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, let us not forget Vrindavan. The Vrindavan, the very place that we're telling people about, let's make sure that there's a Vrindavan for our children and our children's children. And that's why people are getting very serious about planting trees. And the next thing you do after planting trees is protecting those trees from animals and all kinds of tree choppers who come there, because people come and they just see one tree. If I just cut down this one tree, what's the harm? And thereby, if you multiply that hundreds of thousands of times, everything is gone. That's like saying, if I just give a book on Krishna, or if I just tell one person about Balaram, what good will it do? It's just one person. But if hundreds of thousands of people do it, then you have something called a spiritual movement. Therefore, ISKCON, as a spiritual movement, can only exist, can only continue to exist, or any mission can only continue to exist, when each and every member says, yes, let me tell one other person about Krishna. Let's just say one person. Let me tell one person about something. You see, then it happens. Okay. We're good at spreading bad news sometimes, aren't we? Did you hear? Have you heard about that? It's a big controversy. Everybody's no, please tell me. Yeah. Well, what he said was what she said. Wasn't very good at spreading that kind of thing. So, if you go to in the Talavan forest, there is a black deity of Balaram. He's 3.5 feet high. He's with Revati, and he has his right hand raised in Abhayahasta, giving blessings to everyone, removing their fear. But the biggest deity of Vrindavan, before we leave Vrindavan and get on to the later pastimes, how long do you want me to speak for? Another 15 minutes? Can you manage till 10 o'clock? Who can manage till 10 o'clock? That's just 12 minutes time. And I can compress everything down into 12 minutes. Otherwise, it's like Jayadev's accordion. It can either be this size for transport, or it can be this size for full-fledged kirtan. Your accordion says 11 o'clock. Well, you see, if I was really good at this, actually, if I was very good at this, I'd have a beard. And I'd have lots of rings on my finger with a harmonium. And I would have sung you a couple of songs before now. And my voice would have gone, but I'm not. I don't play the harmonium, I don't have rings, and I don't have a beard. So you'll just have to make do with the interrupted storytelling. But the biggest deity of Balaram is, of course, in a place called, what's it called? It's Dauji. He's the deity. But is the village called Dauji as well? Everybody just says Dauji. Dauji ke rasta? Ye rasta? Dauji? They go, So, and this is Dauji, and he is 6 feet 6 inches tall. 6 feet 6 inches. And he's also black. He also has a right hand raised, but he's got huge eyes. And his left hand, yes, left hand, not very good with left and right. Should have seen me tying up my shoelaces. Left and right, he has also has a cup for Varuni beverage. And he was established. This is how you establish deities, just so you know. Just so you know, when you establish a deity, you do it to last 10,000 years. That's why we're very cautious when we establish Radha and Krishna in one of Srila Prabhupada's public temples. We're very, 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 very cautious, because you're meant to establish the worship with a vision that in 10,000 years' time, these deities will still be here, still being worshipped here. They're not movable. Okay? Gauranatai, they're, you know, different. They move all the time. So, I used to have Gauranatai deities. They were in the Edinburgh Temple. Then they were established in a traveling bus that we had here at Bhaktivedanta Manor. And then they moved to Innisfail in, in Northern Ireland. And they've been there for 25 years. So the concept of movable Gauranatai is there. But movable Vishnu, never. Never. The only time you move is when the Mughal army is about to come. And you know that as soon as they come, they will smash. So either then you bury the deities or you put them on wagons and then you take them to Jayapur. And that's why Jayapur has, 8, 9 original Vrindavan deities. They all went there, including Nathji. Nathji also went. For the first time in my life, can you believe it? I've been a devotee for more than 40 years. I've never been to see Nathji. So I'd lose my Gujarati credentials. Okay? Never been to see Nathji. But I went to Nathdwar just early on this year, in February. And Nathdwar, now in my mind, Nathji had all was always 6 foot 6 inches tall. And then I went to Nathdwar and saw actually he's about half that, if that. And it was a great surprise to me. But anyway, the point is that these deities, Dauji in this village has been there for 4,900 years. So you're looking at a deity, and the worship has been going on for 4,900 years. This is, in this country, the National Trust would have moved in a long time ago and put a preservation order on the whole thing. And, when you go to these temples, it's sort of an organized, semi-organized chaos, isn't it? Semi-organized chaos. And it can get very vicious because the pujaris know that the emotions of the people for Balaram will make them, sort of throw themselves at the deity and beg forgiveness and beg that my son goes to college and beg that I can be free from this disease, so that you have to be kept away from the deity. So there's so many people going and so many people coming that they have, the crowd control is basically pushing and shoving. And then all through the village, as you walk through the village, on either side of the village, there's these huge piles of rock crystal sugar. And you buy rock crystal sugar, give it to the pujari. And of course, we from ISKCON, we expect the pujari that there'll be some loving relationship between the pujari and Balaram. And of course, because you've walked many painful miles to get there, that you think, oh yes, he will obviously see that I've come a long way to see Balaram, and he will, take special precautions to establish a loving relationship between me and the deity. But you give them the rock sugar and they throw it at Balaram like this. Throw it. And of course it all lands on the floor. And Balaram is surrounded by all this rock crystal that's This is it. This is the puja. Just throw on the floor. Next. Throw. Next. 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 So many people are coming. All hours of the day. This is just... there's no time for ringing bells and tears in the eyes. Pick up the sugar. Throw it. But it's love. It's another type of love. And you cannot say... You cannot say that these people... because of the lack of finesse or sophistication or bell ringing, don't love Balaram. They do. They love him very much. And that's why they're able to stay there year after year after year after year. I once went to Ahobilam, the place of Lord Nrisimhadev, where there's 9 different deities of Lord Nrisimhadev. And you go through different parts of the jungle to go and see them. And it's quite scary because there's still tigers there. And you hear these howler monkeys. And their howl is much more scary than, you know, who they are. And but it's, when you hear it for the first time, you think, oh, and you're walking through this jungle area and you hear the, and you think, oh my word. And I went to see this particular deity, and this deity is deep inside a cave. And one young man was there, and he'd been there for some years. And we were in a cave. And he has to go even deeper inside the cave. And he's almost bent double. And there's only sitting room when you get to the altar. And sitting room with your head like this. And he turned round to face me. And I've never, ever in my life seen a bigger smile than on that young man's face. And I was thinking, this person comes here every single day. And he's sitting and doing puja in a place where he can only sit cross. I mean, look at me. It's difficult for me to sit. Anybody that can sit cross-legged gets my gets my praise. Hard to sit cross-legged in a dark cave, just candle lit. He's almost bent double, but he's in ecstasy. What a special birth to be able to serve the Lord in that way. And so there's a special relationship there, and we should also pray for that relationship. Prabhupada has given us Krishna and Balaram. We just have to say, thank you. Now I will serve. We just have to choose to serve, that's all. He's given us Krishna and Balaram. He's given us Radha and Krishna. He's given us Jagannath. He's different. He's given us Gauranitai. He's given us Nrisimhadev. In one place, one purport, Prabhupada says, he says, take your pick. There's householders. The householders can worship any form of the Lord that they're attracted to. And the Lord will appear to them in their home, and they can serve him in that way. Anyway, and near that temple is a place called Shira Sagar Kund. And as an offering to Balaram, one time, the milk from 100,000 cows was brought there. The local king arranged for 100,000 cows to bring as an offering to Balaram. But like many holy places, Balaram was had to be rediscovered at one point. Now we move out of Vrindavan, my dear friends. I'm sorry. But just as Krishna chooses to become affiliated with the land that we now call Gujarat. Any Gujaratis here by any chance? Okay. For some reason, I don't know. I don't know why. Krishna chooses Gujarat to go to. And you're very lucky because Krishna lived there for a lot longer than he lives in Vrindavan. And he has many wonderful pastimes. But we have, and you can choose which pastime you want. I'm ready to read any to you or none at all. But we have the wedding of course, Krishna and Balaram. I should mention they go to Mathura. They fight with Mushtika. Chanura. Chanura and Mushtika. Eventually they vanquish Kamsa. And of course, many other pastimes take place. And Krishna establishes Dwarka. Now, Dwarka, you should understand, although Krishna established Dwarka, it wasn't that there was nothing there. Originally it was there was a kingdom called Anatta, and the king of that place was known as, this is a very, very important Leela, and I'll tell you why, and it's gone. Anyway, the king of that place, he had a beautiful daughter, and as kings often do, so where Dwarka is, where Dwarka then became, was further out off the coast, but there was already a kingdom there, and the king there wanted to marry his daughter. And so they went, he said, well, there's no, in typical fashion, every father thinks that there is no son qualified to marry my daughter. Okay? It's like Duryodhan. Every father becomes Duryodhan when it's time for marrying his own daughter. As Krishna said to Duryodhan, I want you to find someone who's better than you. Find a warrior who's better than you. And Duryodhan went all over and he said, I'm sorry, can't find anyone who's a better fighter than me. Then Krishna said to Yudhishthira, I want you to go out and find someone who's worse of a human being than you. And Yudhishthira goes all over and he said, I'm sorry, my lord, I can't find anybody who's worse than me. So these are the two aspects. You know, there's Yudhishthira in all humility and Duryodhan in all pride. Pride is a weakness because Duryodhan's pride was... It was so badly hurt that when he came and he mistook one tile, one square on the floor for land, for being firm, but it was water, and he fell in the water. And upstairs, all the girls were laughing at him. For a Kshatriya, that's intolerable. To have a woman laugh at a Kshatriya, it's almost intolerable. See, Kshatriyas are very, they're very quick to become angry. They're very quick to fight, you know. They're like, well, I don't know, I won't give you a modern comparison, but we see sometimes there are gatherings of certain groups of people, and when they've had a few drinks inside them, they're very quick to start fighting. And that's why Friday night is always, you know, fight night, different parts of the country. Very quick. And even if you don't say anything, even if you don't do anything, just looking at someone, or especially looking at their girlfriend. He says, are you looking at my girlfriend? You looking at me? Are you looking at my girlfriend? You know, and they immediately fight. So a Kshatriya is very prone to fighting. And a Brahmin is very prone to teaching. He's very prone to forgiveness. But therefore, the Mahabharata says these two are different. But they work well. They work well together. Therefore, a Kshatriya, a warrior, always has to have a Brahmin priest. And a priest always has to have some Kshatriya to help him. So you want to build a temple? You know, find a rich person. You want to be a rich person with no problems? Find a Brahmin. They work well together. And the history of Vedic culture is always Brahmins and Kshatriyas working together. When they fight, then you have problems. You have a culture in which you have Kshatriyas and there's no control over their anger. And when they have the nuclear button, they press, or when they have big armies at their disposal, as it was at the time of Krishna, then we have big problems. And it is said that Krishna and Balaram came into this world to remove the world of Kshatriyas who could not be governed by Brahmins. And they did so in three places, in the Vrindavan forest, they vanquished demons in a place called Lohaban. Lohaban was on the outskirts of Mathura. Lohaban. And many were vanquished there because this was next to Mathura. And Jarasandha came with wave after wave after wave. How many times? 17 times he came before he was defeated. It was 17 times he came. So all the demons of the world came to this place and they were vanquished by Krishna and Balaram. Not quite enough. Third time was Kurukshetra. Kurukshetra, they all came, and finally, all this demonic kings were vanquished. But when the relationship between kings and Brahmins breaks down, then you have a problem. And when you have an exacerbation of the problem, then the kings punish the Brahmins, or the Brahmins, you know, as they did with King Vena. You know, the Brahmins killed Vena, not with weapons, but with mantra. They had to be removed. Okay. So there has to be a good relationship between the two. And we see that Krishna Balaram came to restore that relationship. So Aniruddha got married. Krishna had 16,108 queens. Oh, I was telling you the story, wasn't I? So the king, he thought, there is no man who's fit for my daughter. So he went, the story is that he went to see Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma was at that moment being entertained by dancing and singing. And so the servant said, can you wait? He said, yes, we'll wait. So they waited and waited and waited. Then they went to see Lord Brahma. And he said, yes, of course, I can arrange a husband for your daughter. He said, there's just one problem. He said, while you've been waiting, everybody's died. And we have a problem. And when your daughter goes back down to earth, she's going to be 30 feet tall. Because now it's just getting ready for Kali Yuga and everybody is diminished. So your daughter's going to be too tall for any man in the world. And ladies, that is a problem. Too tall, the men don't want you. Too short, they don't want you. These men are very choosy. Men, don't be so choosy. Ladies, don't be so choosy. Because with all these choosy people in the world, it's very difficult for the men and the women to get married. And we need them to get married so that the next generation can continue. Otherwise, we'll have a world populated by single people. And even if the single people chant Hare Krishna, that's very nice. But the next generation of demigods won't be able to come out. And Prabhupada said, there's demigods queuing up to take birth in this movement. So don't keep the demigods waiting. But you will if you're too choosy. Okay? No such thing as a perfect husband. There's no such thing as a perfect wife. There's just people that you can get on well with and, you know, prosper. Anyway, so he was looking for the perfect husband. And in his search for the perfect husband, he lost all possibility of ever finding one. What do you do with a 30-foot tall daughter? Anyway, eventually, Balaram came and he said, well, I'll marry her. I'll marry her. Her name was Revati. He said, I will marry her. So he took his plow and he touched her on the shoulder with his plow and she came down to just underneath Balaram's height. Now, Balaram's plow can do many, many things. You see, because he was very spirited and they had to contend with many demons in their youth. And, you know, when you're a Vaishya family, you don't really tend to have weapons. So the weapons that you pick up, if there's any problem, are the things that are closely to hand. So there's one weapon that he was very skilled at, but it came from when he was very young. You know that Krishna was tied to a grinding mortar. Now, the piece that you shove up and down to grind your haldi, your turmeric roots into powder, this is called a mushala. And a mushala, if there's any problem in the village, the husband of the family, he goes and he picks up the mushala because it's about that long. It's not a little pestle and mortar where you do this. It's a great big thing when you do that. And it's great, you know. So when you see, and it's shaped like a gada or a mace, which is a stick with a ball on the end. You swing around. So in the Olympics at the moment, all these athletic things that they're doing, they were originally for fighting. You know, the shot putter, this is also for fighting. The discus is also for ancient Greeks. It would had you know, some sharp edges on it. So you'd throw that, and it would go skim through the air into the opposing army. So you'd have groups of men, some with bows and arrows, but you'd have these huge, great things going through the sky. And the other one is called the hammer. And the hammer these days is no longer a hammer. It is a ball with a wire. So they spin round and round, and then they send this thing over. But in the days of Balaram, it was more like a hammer. So this is a mushala. So you, when it's used in a domestic setting, it's a mushala, and when you take it out, it becomes a gada. So then, when you see Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra, if you look at the end of Balaram's arms, you'll see on one of them, you'll see this mushala still there. So Balaram's gada, his favorite weapon, was called Balachitta. Balachitta. And he taught many people how to fight. And he taught Duryodhan. And Duryodhan was one of his famous, one of his favorite students. There was a great deal of love between, you can say, guru and disciple. He taught him how to fight. And he also taught, who else did he teach? He taught Bhima. Taught Bhima how to use the mace. Who else did he teach? He also taught, very sadly, he taught Abhimanyu. And Balaram was particularly sad when he came back after traveling around India to go to the holy places to discover that Abhimanyu had been killed in the Battle of Kurukshetra. Because when the teacher sees that his, you know, his a student is defeated, it's very painful for him. Not only that, but when he came back, he saw that his two students were fighting amongst each other. Bhima and Duryodhan were fighting. And they were fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting, and not one of them could win over the other. And he was very troubled by that. So he said, stop, stop, stop fighting. And he tried to stop them fighting, but Krishna intervened. And this is another example of how Krishna and Balaram have a difference of opinion. Because, you know, and Krishna said, no, no. He said, leave them fighting, the Kshatriyas. And then it seemed as if, you know, Bhima cheated because he hit the thighs, the groin area, which Kshatriyas are never meant to do. You're never meant to hit someone, you know, below the belt. And just like in boxing. You know, now they have this, you know, kickboxing or karate, Muay Thai, all these different martial arts. You can use your feet as well as your hands. But in those days, only above the belt. But there was some intrigue. Duryodhan was protected by the wonderful vision of his mother, Gandhari. When she came to protect him, unfortunately, he was wearing a gamcha. You know the story? Didn't want to appear naked before his mother. He was wearing a gamcha. So she protected him, but then she was crestfallen to see that he still had the gamcha. Well, that gamcha meant that nothing, she couldn't give him the protection between the navel and the knee. And so when it came time, Duryodhan was smashed by Bhima on that place. But there was a reason. Why? Why was his leg broken in the thigh. Why was he? Yeah. Because that was how he insulted Draupadi. He said, bring out Draupadi, let's strip her naked. What a good idea. So you know that story. But then during it, he said, come on, come and sit on my lap. And Bhima said, he said, that thigh that you have just slapped, he said, I'll break that thigh. Immediately. And of course, Krishna, he told Balaram, because Balaram was incensed. He said, did you just see what he did? You know, this breaks all the rules. I taught them fighting. This breaks all the Kshatriya codes. Hitting someone below the belt. And then Krishna said, no, don't worry. He said, it is because of a promise that he made. He made the promise to Draupadi that I will break your thigh. And so when the time came, that thigh was broken. But actually, Krishna had already made the arrangement because Duryodhan was going to see his mother completely naked. And Krishna, he said, where are you going? He said, where are you going? Because, you know, at the end of the day, they met together and they ate together, okay, at the end of a day's battle at Kurukshetra. So he said, where are you going? He said, I'm going to see my mother. She's going to protect me and make me invincible. Or words to that effect. He said, but He said, you can't appear before your mother without a gamcha. Wear a gamcha. So Krishna already knew. Sneaky, isn't he? Sneaky. Krishna's sneaky then, and he's sneaky now. And he's making the same kind of arrangements with you, each and every one of you, that you don't know. Krishna will make an arrangement for you to bring you closer to him in this lifetime. It's very clever. You won't even know sometimes. So anyway, then Balaram goes to visit Vrindavan, and he goes back to Kailanvan, Ramagata. Let's sing it. Jaya Rama Gata Jaya. Oh, you're not going to sing the other line? Okay. This wonderful place, as we've just described, Ramagata, honey, his own gopis, the Rasalila under the moonlight. What a wonderful vision. However, somebody didn't want to join in. And her name was Yamuna. Didn't want to join in. So Balaram used the tip of his plow to pull her. Now, I didn't tell you the other story. I should have told you this story. The highly controversial story about Balaram. Highly controversial. Because Aniruddha was getting married. During the wedding, you know, people have a lot, there's a lot of fun, okay, during a wedding, looking at the Gujarati ladies. We play Kota Kori and all these different games. The men were playing chess. And Rukmi, who was the brother of the bride. Okay. And you would imagine that he was deserving of deference being part of the family. The one place that you don't want to start a fight is at a wedding. But unfortunately, it's the one place where fights sometimes happen. Because there's a great deal of rivalry between the two families. Because the families, you know, the boy and girl might be happy, but the families never think that, you know, he's good enough, or that family's not good enough, or her family's not good enough. They're never good enough, okay? Because they're not you. So anyway, here's Balaram, and he gets in a fight with Rukmi, and the king of Kalinga is laughing because Balaram's losing the chess match, and all hell breaks loose, or all Vaikuntha breaks loose, and there's a few people end up with no teeth or dead, just over a chess match. But anyway, you know that story. So after this comes visiting Vrindavan, and after this comes Dvivida Gorilla, who's another person that should have worn a gamcha, but didn't. He should have worn a gamcha because he was intent on displaying his private parts to the ladies. And Balaram said, well, this is intolerable. Now, you know, he's a gorilla, so you expect one thing of a sophisticated human being and another thing of gorilla, but he was so incensed by this that he, you know, he had to have a fight with him. So first with tree trunks and then with bare hands, and Dvivida Gorilla was dispatched. So then comes the marriage of Samba. Samba, of course, he has a very interesting history with a mace. It's the same Samba, mace and Balaram, and Balaram and the mace and Balaram. So Samba is the person who, he went before the sages, and he had a mace hidden in his tummy. You know, the big ball of the mace at the end. He put it under his shirt, and he dressed as a lady with the, you know, the sari. And the boys came in front. This young lady wants to know, my dear sages, will she give birth to a girl or a boy? And then the sages say, this girl will give birth to a lump of iron that will destroy the entire Yadu dynasty. The boys became very frightened, okay? And the mace dropped out, and now the sages have spoken. Whatever a sage speaks is like when a kshatriya speaks. Especially in Vedic culture, in those days, you don't say something unless you mean it. You don't say something unless you're going to follow through. Now you can say any damn thing, and they can't get you unless they've got your signature. Or your fingerprints. Or both. But in those days, your word was your bond. And if there was a witness, or two witnesses, and you spoke, then you've said something. And if someone says, you know, I'm going to smash that thigh because you've insulted my wife, it could be 14 years later, but it's done. You know, because everybody remembers. I will, therefore Prabhupada says, you know, when you take initiation, chant 16 rounds, follow the four regulated principles. I will. Okay? Means that you will for the rest of your life. And Prabhupada would sometimes really not quite understand how people could make a vow. He said, but you've promised. He said, you've promised in front of Krishna, in front of the sacred fire, in front of me, in front of the Brahmins and Vaishnavas. You made that promise. How could you break that promise? See? But in Vedic times, you made a promise. And therefore, you did two things. Before you made the promise, you made really sure that you could keep it. And after you made the promise, you put things in position in your life so that you could keep the promise. And all of society was about making promises and keeping promises. This is Vedic culture. So when you tell someone something, of course they believed it. Even if it, you could not say, for instance, yeah, but, you know, I was young when I did that. I wasn't really thinking. Yeah, but I was intoxicated when I signed the, you know. It's too late. It's like sometimes people, they come to me and they say, oh, I've had a bit of a checkered past. I said, that's okay. Krishna loves you. Isn't that? That's what we say to people. He says, yeah, but does Krishna love my tattoo? I said, you've got a tattoo that you're embarrassed about? He said, yeah. He said, and sometimes they have a tattoo in a part of the body where really you shouldn't get tattoos. And you look at the tattoo and you think, and he says, well, I was drunk when I had the tattoo done. I said, well, you were drunk, and maybe the tattoo artist was drunk as well. It's a failure all around. So the point is, you cannot be intoxicated before you make a decision, and you cannot be in any way. But if you make the decision, once you have made the decision, then, like that tattoo, it is, that's it. And therefore, we find that in today's culture, people really don't like... There's one way that you can't be held responsible for your promises. You know what that is? There's only one thing that you can do in Vedic culture or in modern culture where you will not be held responsible for your promises. And that's to not make promises. So now we have a culture where people don't make promises. People live together, they don't make any promises between each other. And this is even in the devotee community, we, you know, just live together. Prabhupada said you could live together for a year, right? Before you make that promise, before you make the commitment. Some people just live together. No, it's not part of our culture. You make the promise, and then you stay together. But what if it's painful? I made the promise, I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. Now you do. Now you know what you've got yourself into. But it's painful. Yes, it's painful. But whoever you married, you would have had the same pain. Because it's you. And she would have had the same pain because it's her. And now you're delivering to each other the same level of pain. And everything is as it should be. So we have to be careful before we make promises. But unless you make a promise, you can't get the benefit of what should happen next. So here, we have a marriage taking place. Samba is getting married, and Hastinapur is the place where this marriage is taking place. But it's not an ordinary marriage. It's a Kshatriya-spirited marriage. And what that means is that, you know, Kshatriyas are very quick. You know, the engagement period lasts about, I don't know, 30 seconds in some cases. You know, the Kshatriya You know about everybody's leaving now. The Kshatriya sees a young lady, and a standard chat-up line for a Kshatriya is, "My dear young lady of lotus eyes and thin waist and heavy breasts, who are you? Who is looking after you? Come with me. I will be your husband." And that's it. That's it. That's the Kshatriya sort of engagement period. And then they're married very quickly. And sometimes they even do, there's 8 different ways of getting married. And one of them is kidnapping. One of them is kidnapping. You just ride in with your army. You kidnap the bride. It helps if she knows that you're going to do that on the day. Like when Krishna kidnapped Rukmini, she knew that Krishna might turn up because she'd already written a letter to him. And she hoped that the Brahmin was able to deliver the letter. So when Krishna came on the day, it was no surprise to Rukmini, but it was a surprise to everybody else. So Samba, he turned up and he kidnapped Lakshmana. And although the family were quite, he's a nice boy, he's Krishna's son, that's not bad. He's part of the Yadu dynasty. She'll probably be looked after very nicely. They had to put up a fight. They had to put up a fight. Why? Because we're Kshatriyas. We can't just let you come in here and kidnap her without a murmur from us. So they had to put up a fight. So they put up a fight. And they arrested Samba and locked him up. Now, when news that Samba had been locked up got back to the Yadu dynasty over in Dwarka, they said, okay, let's raise an army. Let's go. But then they said, no, let's do this a different way. Lakshmana is the daughter of Duryodhan. So let Balaram go and let's see if he can make peace. Okay? So what do you think? You think that Balaram's able to make peace? Shall I read it to you? Okay. So Srila Prabhupada describes. So what happened was when Balaram got to Hastinapur, they all heard, the messengers, the security guards that come out miles from Hastinapur, spies, and they have a chain of spies to help people understand. And the news was sent back very quickly. Balaram's on his way. And Duryodhan said, "It's Balaram, my old teacher. Let me go. Come on, everybody. Let's go and see Balaram." So they came up to the gates and even beyond the gates. And they came with sandalwood paste and flower garlands and flower petals and dancing girls and argya and maruparka and everything like this. You don't know the end of the story. You're being pulled by your husband. So then he got there. And Balaram said, "I've come not in my own right, but on behalf of the Yadu dynasty. And the Yadu dynasty demand that you release Samba and allow the marriage to take place because it has taken, this has all been done according to our Kshatriya code." So then this is what they say. So they said that, he said, "Who are the Yadu dynasty to dictate to us?" See, the Yadu dynasty is not the Pandavas. You see, they had rivalry with the Pandavas, but at least they had some title. It was like Lancaster and York. At least there was some title there, Fighting, but at least there was some nobility dealing with nobility. But the Yadu dynasty, who are they? Who are they? It's exactly what they said. Yadu dynasty, who are they? We don't even recognize them as being nobility. Who is this Krishna? We know he's your brother, and we love you, but really, come on. Who's the Yadu dynasty? I mean, it's almost as if the shoes want to come above the crown. When the Yadu dynasty says, "You must do this." So you go back, and you tell Ugrasena, there's no way that we are going to accept that he can tell us what to do with our daughter. This is like the shoes being going onto the head. No, really. So go home, and that's the message we want to convey. Oh, dear. I wonder what Balaram did next. So Prabhupada describes, "Although Lord Balaram patiently heard their insulting words and simply observed their uncivil behavior, from his appearance, it was clear that he was burning with that he was burning with anger. There are some things you just don't do where Balaam is concerned. Balaam was thinking of retaliating with great vengeance. His bodily features became so much agitated that it was difficult for anyone to look at him. He laughed very loudly and said, "It is true," this is my grave Balaram voice, "that if a man becomes too much puffed up because of his family, opulence, beauty, and material advancement, he no longer wants a peaceful life, but becomes belligerent toward all others. It is useless to give such a person good instructions for gentle behavior and a peaceful life. On the contrary, one should search out the ways and means to punish him. Just see how impudent are the members of this Kuru dynasty. I wanted to make a peaceful settlement despite the anger of all the other members of the Yadu dynasty, including Lord Krishna himself. They were preparing to attack the whole kingdom of the Kuru dynasty, but I pacified them and took the trouble to come here to settle the affair without any fighting. Yet these rascals behave like this. It is clear that they do not want a peaceful settlement, for they are factually warmongers. With great pride, they have repeatedly insulted me by calling the Yadu dynasty ill names. Even the king of heaven, Indra, abides by the order of the Yadu dynasty. And you consider King Ugrasena, the head of the Bhojas, Vrishnis, Andakas, and Yadavas, to be the leader of a small phalanx? Your conclusion is wonderful. You do not care for King Ugrasena, whose order is obeyed even by Indra. Consider the exalted position of the Yadu dynasty. They have forcibly used both the assembly house and the Parijata tree of the heavenly planets, and still you think they cannot order you? Don't you even think that Lord Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead, can sit on the exalted royal throne and command everyone? All right. If your thinking is like that, you deserve to be taught a very good lesson. You have thought it wise that the royal insignias like the whisk, fan, white umbrella, royal throne, and other princely paraphernalia not be used by the Yadu dynasty. Does this mean that even Lord Krishna, the lord of the whole creation and the husband of the goddess of fortune, cannot use this royal paraphernalia? The dust of Krishna's feet is worshipped by all the great demigods. The Ganges water inundates the whole world, and since it emanates from his feet, its banks have turned into great places of pilgrimage. The principal deities of all planets engage in his service and consider themselves most fortunate to take the dust of Krishna's feet on their helmets. Great demigods like Brahma, Shiva, and even the goddess of fortune, and I, are simply plenary parts of his spiritual identity, and still you think that he is not fit to use the royal insignia or even sit on the royal throne? Alas, how regrettable it is that these fools consider us, the members of the Yadu dynasty, to be like shoes and themselves to be like helmets. It is clear now that these leaders of the Kuru dynasty have become